Welcome to episode 161 of Magically Amateuring.
Holy shit.
I know, that's a lot of episodes.
It really is a lot of episodes. 161 is more than the number of years during which Julius Caesar was the leader of Rome.
Do you know that for a fact?
Yes.
I believe that Julius Caesar was a supreme robot being and lived to be 500.
Oh my goodness, before he was stabbed.
Yeah, so he was stabbed and then he's like, gonna die. And then he was like, oh my God, I probably don't want to die. I'll quick make some modifications and become a robot being.
Oh my goodness, so you're saying that the end of Julius Caesar was not in fact when he got stabbed.
No.
That was really just his rebirth as the supreme robot being.
Yes, and every other ruler of Rome from that point on is really Julius Caesar robot. But, like, he can change his form. So people didn't know.
My goodness.
I know. You learn a lot being a weird time traveler.
You really do.
Anyway, welcome to the show.
Hey, everybody. This is, as Maria mentioned, episode 161 of Magic the Amateuring, a podcast for people playing the game of Magic the Gathering, whether for the first time, the second time, the 161st time.
Yep.
Or any number between or over those numbers.
How many times, this makes me think, how many times do you think you've played a game of Magic?
Holy shit, I have no idea.
Yeah, it's going to be an absurdly no high idea. Number.
Well, because I feel like, you know, Magic is so strange in that it's like, right, you can go like 3 days without playing any. And then in a weekend, I'll play a lot of games of Magic in a weekend.
You know, and it's funny too, like sometimes you get sent those like surveys, it's not a survey, you get sent the number of packs you've won or whatever on Magic Online, and I'm always just like, oh my God.
Oh man.
It's an obscene number. Yeah.
I just remember especially during BFZ draft, which mentioned several times, like I was just like killing it. And that number like skyrocketed during that time. Like it went up by like almost 100 packs over the course of playing BFZ for me. And I was just like,
wow.
Crazy.
Well, I'm one of your hosts of Magic the Amateuring, Maria.
I'm another one of your hosts, Megan.
We're
I'm
happy.
Also a third host.
What? The named, Holy Ghost?
Named Paul.
Oh. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Nothing.
Okay. I want to point out, if you're listening to this podcast with your ears, you could also watch it with your face holes that perceive light. And that means your eyes.
Maria, eyes aren't holes.
What?
Eyes aren't holes.
You mean your eyes are not holes in your head?
What? No.
My eyes are just two sunken holes with light sensitivity.
Terrifying. It is absolutely and completely terrifying.
You can watch this podcast as well on Tolarian Community College. It comes out on Fridays, the Friday after our podcast version is released, which would be Tuesday.
That is the stuff of which nightmares are made.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I hope there's a new creature type in Magic that comes out of that horrifying sentence that I just said.
Yeah.
Anyways. What I'm trying to say is you can watch this podcast as well as listen to it. And people have been noting that the shelf on the wall behind us does not seem level.
It is level.
It is. I swear to God. Girl Scouts Honor. Is that three fingers or two? I can't remember. Anyway, Girl Scouts Honor. It is level. It just looks not level because of the angle I think we're shooting this with the video.
Yeah.
So calm the fuck down, everybody. My shelf is level.
Shelf is level. Otherwise, if it was that unlevel, that shit would slide right off.
Yeah, it kind of would.
Do you not understand how shelves work?
Okay, enough with the level shelf. I'm done
talking
about it.
All right, we're done talking about it.
Anyway, I just wanted to point that out. But also to point out that you can watch our video
absolutely podcast. You can. And determine whether that shelf is or is not level.
Yeah, you can choose for yourself.
You too can chime in.
I want to say something before we start the show, which is going to be an exciting show.
Yes.
Because we're going to talk more about Oracle text.
Yeah.
People send us stuff on Twitter of their favorite old Oracle text, favorite old cards, and we're going to read the old text as well as the Oracle text.
Sometimes it only gets more confusing.
Oh, it's really great. We're also going to have a standard corner.
Yeah, we are.
Because Megan and I are going to be heading down to GP Houston this weekend. Wow, that's weird to say.
It really is.
Oh,
this weekend.
Oh, I have so much work
I'm not ready.
To do before...
I'm not prepared in my personal or professional life.
But you know what? We're also going to talk about Team Sealed because we're going to be heading to GPDC coming up.
In like 3 weeks.
Oh my. We are just jet
life
setters.
Is crazy.
Yeah, so that's all coming up in the show. But before we talk about that, I wanted to mention, of course, that we do have a Patreon.
Yes.
Patreon.com/MTAcast. And we've been getting some wonderfully fabulous and generous donations from people out there, people who love the show and want to support it.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say thank you to all those people who are new members and people who have been patrons for a long time. And anybody who supports at the $10 per episode or above, other is no above, but at the $10 level, you know that after you support for 5 months consecutively, you get a playmat and t-shirt and all that sort of thing. Well, guess what?
The playmats are finally here. Check it out.
Oh, in all of its so beautiful.
Amazing glory.
Good luck. High five.
Yes. You should head on over to the video if you are only listening to this on audio. Because we're not going to describe it with our words. We're only going to show it with our hands.
Yeah. And they're not for sale yet on our website, but they will soon be. Yes. We just need to square away how we're going to be able to ship them. So they, I think within a week or two, they will be available on our website to purchase as well.
Oh, snap.
But you can always support at $10 an episode or more for 5 months, and you'll be able to get one for free thrown in. So yeah, support at any level is something we greatly appreciate. If it's something that gives you a smile on your face every day, come over and consider donating, especially since we're due to hit our next big milestone on
Patreon. We are, during which we will have to write and record more episodes of My Roommate is a Planeswalker, which we are fully prepared to do.
The number one comment about my roommate is a planeswalker is that the intro is too long, which I agree it is too long,
because
but it's also
like half of the episode.
It's also great.
It is also great.
So we will take that comment into consideration.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, that's all on Patreon. And of course, to Larian Community College for the video version of this podcast. Big props to the prof for editing our episodes for us.
By taking into consideration, do you mean that we'll make a longer cut of the
intro? Yeah, it'll be even longer.
It's gonna be like a 1 minute intro and a 30 second episode and just be like, fuck everybody.
By the way, we just got done recording an episode of Magic the Pro the Ring.
Ooh.
Yes.
Exciting.
With a very special pro guest, and that episode will be out after this one, sometime this week. So stay tuned for that. It was a great interview.
It really was. I very much enjoyed
it. With a
it.
Delightful human.
It really, really was.
Does that give you any clues to who it was?
Yes.
Yes, it should. For the noobs, Oracle 2.0.
That's right. People were very kindly tweeted at us some of the even more absurd original card texts.
Oh my gosh.
From early Magic sets, back when they were still, you know, learning how to write.
Yep.
And how to use the English language to communicate rules.
Well, this was great because we activated a lot of players who probably have been playing for a long time. And they're like, hey, did you think about this card? This card made zero sense to me then. And it makes zero sense to me now.
My favorite is that some of these have Oracle text that is actually like
confusing. I don't know.
Just as or more confusing than the original text. It's like, I have no idea what that meant.
No.
And your reinterpretation also means nothing.
So we're going to tell you about some of that stuff. People have corrected us as well that we mentioned that buried was removed from the game, but it also
put in the graveyard. Put in the graveyard, but it cannot be regenerated.
It also cannot be regenerated.
Which I wondered about, but I didn't want to say it.
Yeah.
Because I was worried that I'd be wrong. As it was, I didn't say it and was wrong. So I should have just been worried the whole time anyway.
Yep. So it means goes to the graveyard, no possibility of regeneration.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Bury it. It's dead.
So we also want to take this opportunity to talk about some older rules that are no longer pertinent in the game, but are pretty interesting.
Absolutely.
So what do you want to start with first, Megan? Cards or rules?
Oh, let's start with a couple of rules that we don't see anymore.
Yeah. Magic is what? Magic hasn't always been this way, you guys.
No.
It hasn't always been this delightful game. I mean, it always has been this delightful game.
Yes.
But there are parts of it that were strange.
Confusing.
In my opinion.
And weird.
So there used to be this thing called Mana Burn.
Ooh. Mana Burn was when if you had, say you added a bunch of mana to your pool with something like Nykthos, a shrine to Nyx.
Yeah.
You know, there were devotion decks where you could just add absurd amounts of mana. You know, you could end up with like 12 mana in your mana pool. And maybe you only had 7 mana worth of cards to cast or abilities to activate. Well, you have that 5 leftover mana. And these days, it's just sort of like you go to the end of that phase of your turn.
And it goes away.
And it just goes away.
Bye.
And, you know, no one complains about it. No one's worried about it.
See you later, mana.
Exactly. It's just sort of like, well, that happened and
Now
it's gone.
Much like a failed relationship.
But it used to be that if you had mana... All right. If you had mana in your mana pool at the end of a phase of your turn and you were going to move on to the next phase without spending that mana, you were going burn you. Each mana in that mana pool use would burn you
for a point of damage.
Yeah. So if you had 12 due to Nykthos and then you only used 7, you would suffer 5 points of a burn to your own face.
Question. Do you think this is a secret conspiracy by the Magic Illuminati who are in cohorts with credit in card companies? Cahoots? What did I say?
Cohorts?
I laughed so hard my headphones fell off. I'm thinking too much about magic terms. Yeah, you... In cohorts?
Sure.
Was magic, the people of magic, in cohorts with credit card companies who want you to spend all of your money every month?
As you know, I don't have a credit card.
Oh, I didn't know that, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
We've definitely talked about this.
Oh, okay.
I believe it's a total bullshit scam. I realize that I need one if I want to someday purchase a house. Yeah. Or,
well, you don't really buy a house with a credit card.
But you need a credit, a reasonable
you
one.
You do, yeah.
Point is, I think it's bullshit.
Yeah, I guess it kind of is.
It really is. But anyways.
Yeah, so they're trying to get you to spend all your money.
Exactly, they really are. It,
anyway, yeah, Manaburn. And the reason we encountered Manaburn on a recent episode, because we talked about, what is it, the counterspell that... Mana Drain. Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
We talked about Mana Drain.
Oh, yeah. That card would have, at one point, had a downside. If you countered something that cost 6, and then the next turn, you know, that mana gets added to your mana pool as colorless, and you only spend, you only have a 4 mana spell to cast off of it. Well, buddy.
Well, yeah.
You're getting burned.
You're getting burned. Nowadays, no burn.
Exactly. There's also a card, I want to say Glissa.
Yeah.
Who was during the days of Mirrodin, and she had an ability where if you could tap her to destroy an artifact with converted mana cost equal to the amount of mana in your mana pool.
That is what it says.
Right, and so strike. And that was during the days of Mana Burn. So if your opponent has a 6 mana artifact, you could add 6 mana to your mana pool and then tap Glissa to kill that artifact. But if you don't use that mana, then it's going to burn you for 6.
Glissa Sunseeker.
So she would have technically, she had kind of a downside then. That ability had a downside. These days, Glissa just all upside.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Super interesting.
Another thing that's changed fairly recently is the legendary rule.
Yes. That has been during our time.
During our magic lifetime.
Absolutely. It used to be that if there was a legendary creature on the battlefield, there could only be one.
Yep.
It was straight Highlander.
And that makes sense in a way. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's not that way anymore.
They're legendary. Yeah, so that meant between you and your opponent, you could only have one.
Yep. Nobody could have. And the most recent one was the one that survived.
Yes.
That was played.
Or no, they would both die.
They would both die.
No, they both died.
Oh.
So that was actually super relevant when Geist of St. Traft was in Standard.
Yeah.
During, I want to say that's from, that was during, original Innistrad. And there was actually, it was in a lot of Standard decks. And there were some decks that would have their own Geist in the sideboard.
Just to
kill the opposing Geist of St. Traft, because it's a legendary creature that has hexproof.
Yeah.
But you can kill it by playing your own copy.
Weird.
And then they're both dead. Isn't that super crazy?
So strange.
That was an actual thing that came up. So people would specifically play geists of their own just to kill opposing geists.
And then Wizards was like, this is weird. We should change this rule.
Well, and some people thought that it might have been a result of them having way more legendary creatures with the gods that came around in Theros.
Oh, sure. Could have been.
Might have been part of it. Or just that, planeswalkers are a bigger part of the game than they used to be.
Yeah.
Especially they're bigger part of the game than when there weren't any.
Yeah, solid fact.
I mean, once you create something, there is more of it than when there was none of it.
Yeah, that's so true.
Except if you're baking cookies, in which case you start out with 0 and you end with 0.
But in the middle, you have cookies.
Anyways, so I thought that was super interesting. And now, of course, it works that if you have, you can have one and your opponent can have one. So you can each have a legendary creature. And as you mentioned, if you play a second copy of your own legendary creature, or it more often would come up, if you have, say, a Jace Architect of Thought, and you flip into a Jace Telepath Unbound, you can pick which one of those two Jaces to keep.
Sure. And this came up actually at the Pro Tour most recently, Pro Tour Oath of the Gatewatch, with Eye of Eugene.
Yes.
So a player had an Eye of Eugene, which they were tapping for mana thanks to Oob Org, which was in play. And they actually played another Eye of Eugene to
Urborg.
What did I say?
Urborg? It was just delightful.
Uborg.
It was just a delightful thing
to call it. I took out one of the R's.
Uborg.
Okay, so thanks to an Urborg, they were tapping it for mana. And what they did is they actually played a different Eye of Eugene so that it entered untapped and they could tap it for more.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, that's interesting.
Which is also something that came up with Nykthos a lot, actually, back during the days of Devotion decks, is that you could play one Nykthos, make a trillion mana, and then play another copy, and then make a trillion more.
Wow. One of the most famous rules that does not exist anymore is the rule concerning damage going on the stack.
Yes, absolutely.
Damage does not use the stack anymore. You might encounter this, especially if you're playing Magic Online, in which case that damage just, like, it happens.
It just...
There it is.
It is.
Boom. It's done.
It's not like, oh, here's the, you know, the little stack doesn't pop up with the damage on it.
So is this relevant when we think about lifelink?
It is relevant when we think about lifelink. Yeah, because it could... So lifelink doesn't go on the stack either, right?
Right.
But the original iteration, which we talked about last time, did go on the stack.
Right.
It was something that triggered. So if you say you're in combat with someone, and you have two attacking creatures and they have one creature with a lifelink, and one of your creatures is lethal if it gets through. So you attack with both, they block with their lifelinker. And then, or they're not their lifelinker, but their spirit link, right? Yeah. That just has when damage, you know, when it gets deals damage, you gain that much life. They can technically kill you with that on the stack. Say they got you to three with their creatures, and then that ability goes on the stack. They can, like, burn you in response to that happening. Mm-hmm. Whereas with lifelink, that doesn't happen.
Right.
It's just, okay, that creature dealt damage, and now it's also, like, and you gain that life.
It's simultaneously.
Exactly. It just happens.
Right. So that's really weird to think about a world where damage was on the stack. Like, oh, you're gonna gain some life, guess what, burn your face.
Yeah. Or that's actually super interesting with cards like City of Brass, which is kind of like an old school version of ish of Mana Confluence, right? Where you could add one of any color and it would deal a damage to you. And these days, you know, when you tap a Mana Confluence, like you said, it just happens.
Boom, you,
like,
lose
you
it.
You lose that life. And it used to be, so I tap my City of Brass, that one damage goes on the stack. So if I'm at one, I can tap it.
And do something.
And do something still, because that damage is on the stack.
So weird.
So if I have an instant, say my opponent's at three, and I only have this City of Brass, and I'm at one, and I have a lightning bolt in hand, I can tap it. The damage went on the stack, and I can lightning bolt my opponent, and they would die.
Because then you're dead.
No, I'm not, because that damage is on the stack, and it hasn't resolved yet.
Flavorfully, you are killing yourself to kill your opponent.
Yeah, but I didn't die because my lightning bolt resolved before the damage from my City of Brass to me resolved.
But if you're thinking about it like a battle on the battlefield, like legitimately, and you're like, okay, I can only stab myself in the heart, but that will in turn kill my opponent.
Yeah.
You would be like, boom, stabbed in the heart. Magic. My opponent's dead. But then you're like, oh, no, I'm dying, but I killed you too, motherfucker.
But look, if you're looking at it from your opponent's perspective, they never know if you die or not because they're already dead.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So as far as they know, you just won because they're dead and they're not around to see what happens to you afterwards.
After my heart stabbing.
They can assume. They can be like, well, when I died, I saw that they had stabbed themselves in the heart, so I can assume it, but I don't know.
So weird.
As far as I know.
I want to talk about one more weird rule.
Go for it.
And it was ante.
Yeah.
I wonder if we talked about this on the show before. I think we've mentioned it.
Probably.
Oh my God, my microphone just fell out of its own house. Okay, we're fine.
Have you ever fallen out of your own house?
I mean, some nights, some long nights. Okay, so ante. Okay, this was way back in the day. If players agree to play for ante, the rule is that at the beginning of the game, each player puts a random card from his or her library into an ante zone, which sounds like somewhere where you put your mom's sister. And then the winner of the game would get permanent ownership of all cards in the ante zone.
Aunt Mary's coming over, so someone prep the ante zone.
Put out potpourri in the bathroom. Oh boy.
What?
You know,
do your ants smell?
Do you have some stinky poop ants? Some ants with some stinky poos?
Nope.
No?
No.
I think you're just being nice. They don't listen to the show, Megan.
I don't
you
think
can
that I walk around evaluating whether or not my ants poop smells. And oh, I think the okay, fact well, that you do is weird.
You know, you just it's just one of those things you know.
No,
you know?
It's like, not. It's not.
You
it's
telling not me a thing that you know. You don't even know which of your relative has the worst poop smell.
No, I literally don't know that. Is that actually a thing you know about your family?
Let me think. No, I guess.
Okay,
I mean,
that's what I thought.
Maybe I know that maybe my grandmas were kind of bad.
What? That's so weird and so gross. Stop talking
okay,
about this.
Okay, I'm sorry. Anyway, Andy used to be a thing. Can you imagine that? Like putting like randomly put
a
in...
random card?
Oh God, that oh, would man. Suck.
And it could be like your a Black Lotus.
Yeah, here's my Black. Oh, well, shoot. That card's not going to be worth anything.
Whatever.
Well, it doesn't matter. Yeah, I mean, that used to be the way it was. You That's didn't have to crazy. Play with it. But there were a lot of cards that mentioned Auntie.
Yeah.
So there was in the rules text on some cards. All right. Let's get back to talking about some crazy text.
Crazy oracle text okay. going on here.
So I'm going to read for you. This card has come up a couple of times, and it's Chain of Metastopheles.
Okay.
Chain of Metastopheles. Okay. Every time a player, it's one in a black enchantment. Every time a player draws a card, that player must first discard a card from his or her hand. If there are no cards in player's hand, take top card from library and place it in the graveyard instead of drawing. This enchantment does not apply to the first card drawn by a player during the draw phase. What does that mean?
So it's not talking about at, like the first card that you draw during your turn, like, you know, like untap, yeah. upkeep, draw. It doesn't apply to that draw step.
Okay.
That's what the end part refers to.
Yikes.
The rest of it, I mean, it's exactly like it said, Maria.
Okay, so let me read the oracle text. If a player would draw a card, except for the first one he or she draws in his or her draw step each turn, that player discards a card instead. If the player discards a card this way, he or she draws a card. If the player doesn't discard a card this way, he or she puts the top card of his or her library into his or her graveyard. Okay, well, that actually makes sense.
Yeah, so it's like you can't draw extra cards.
Sure, okay.
Basically is what it's preventing.
So you are going to be, that card's just going to hose you.
Yeah.
Okay, you ready for this one?
Yes, this I'm so ready for this one.
Maybe one of my favorites. Camouflage, one green instant. You may rearrange your attacking creatures and place them face down, revealing which is which only after defense is chosen. If this results in an impossible block, such as a non-flying creature blocking flying creature, illegal blockers cannot block this turn.
So, not only it completely what? Does away with the fact that once a creature is blocked, it's blocked.
Yeah, no, I mean,
it's just like, no. Hey, I know that we have that rule established, but fuck that. But
fuck that rule.
Do you know what? If you may have blocked this flying creature with a non-flying creature, but too bad, it's not blocking anymore.
Yep. This is the oracle text, which hopefully will make it a little more clear.
Okay.
Cast camouflage only during your declare attacker step.
Whoa, I feel like they completely added that one
in. That's pretty precise.
Exactly.
This turn, instead of declaring blockers, each defending player chooses any number of creatures he or she controls and divides them into a number of piles equal to the number of attacking creatures for whom that player is a defending player. Still sounds terrible.
Yep.
Creatures he or she controls that can block additional creatures may likewise be put into additional piles. Assign each pile to a different one of those attacking creatures at random. Each creature in a pile that can block the creature that pile... Well... Each creature in a pile that can block the creature that pile is assigned to does so. Piles can be empty.
That is the Yikes. Most confusing thing Yikes. I've ever read.
I don't know which one's more confusing, honestly.
They both are.
Oh my God.
I honestly think that the original is less confusing.
So basically...
Because... So I think the problem is what they had to do was... If all of your creatures got turned face down,
yeah.
as camouflage originally wants you to, they all, now that we have morph,
yeah,
they're all the tutus. And so maybe your opponent could do something in response, right?
Yeah.
Like they could, if they have like a 2 damage burn spell in hand, they could burn something when that's not the card's intent is to turn them into all into tutus, however momentarily.
Yeah.
So even though by the time combat damage is dealt, they're not tutus anymore. Oh, there is a Jesus. Moment during which they're tutus, which the oracle text then has to get around.
Oh, wow. That's tricky.
It really is. It's Ooh. Some brilliant maneuvering, frankly.
Okay, here's another one. Illusionary Mask. Costs 2 colorless. X colon. You can summon a creature face down so opponent doesn't know what it is. Just FYI, that's why you're doing
this. That's why you're doing this.
The X cost can be any amount of mana, even 0. Just FYI, again. It serves to hide the true casting cost of the creature, which you will have to spend.
What does that even mean? Which you will have to spend.
Sorry. Oh. As soon as a face down creature receives damage, deals damage, or is tapped, you may turn it face up. What is the point? You're just hiding that card?
Yep, you're just hiding that card. So it's like, you know, say I have a 4-mana creature in hand.
Yeah.
I could pay 6 and put it face down.
Ooh.
And maybe you're going to think it's something. yeah. And you're going to be like, oh, maybe that's a giant creature or something.
I'm scared.
And that's as far as I'm getting with the logic. All right.
So here's the Oracle text.
But the point is that once it actually does anything or anything happens to it, it gets turned face up. So who?
Do I have to pay for it again?
No.
But I have to pay at least X, which is its casting cost.
You have to pay at least its casting cost in X.
Okay. Got it. All right. Here's the Oracle text, which is somehow longer.
Yeah.
X. You may choose a creature card in your hand whose mana cost could be paid by some amount of or all of the mana you spent on X. Sounds terrible. If you do, you may cast that card face down as a 2/2 creature spell without paying its mana cost. If the creature that spell becomes as it resolves has not been turned face up and would assign or deal damage, be dealt damage, or become tapped, instead it's turned face up and assigns or deals damage, is dealt damage, or becomes tapped. Activate this ability only anytime you could cast a sorcery.
That's insane.
Oh boy.
That's completely crazy.
So this card was kind of like a fun, like, Johnny sort of card back in the day. Like, you don't know what this is.
You don't know what's happening.
But since Morph happened, like, the world is different.
It really is. Morph really changed the face of our world.
I agree.
As it changed the face of creatures who could now be faceless.
Who could now be face down.
Moving on. anyways, you know, I feel like part of what's happened in Magic is that, you know, they have become better at explaining rules clearly and succinctly, but also they just don't make cards like this anymore.
Right, they don't.
They just completely avoid the, like, hey, what's a card that's going to cause, like, a complete clusterfuck if we try and explain it rules-wise?
I can see it, like, both ways, because one way it is kind of cool that they create these cards that are just like, what? And it's just so weird and strange, and there's no way it's competitive, but it's fun. But at the same time, like, I feel for the judges out there, that those poor judges that have to deal with this kind of stuff. So
we're like, hey,
I get it.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's some Magic history for you, kids.
Boom. Hey, peeps.
Standard corner.
It's just a standard corner.
Just your average run-of-the-mill corner.
Nothing special about it.
Well, coming up this weekend is GP Houston.
Absolutely. It's going to be a standard GP.
Format standard.
Format? What was it?
Standard.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. That's maybe why we're having a standard corner.
That could be part of the reason. I think it's interesting, too, because the Pro Tour, which just happened, was modern. So we didn't get a chance to see kind of what's new and standard now that Oath is out.
No. Even more importantly, we didn't have to watch a bunch of hours of Rally Decks.
No. Oh, God.
Instead, we watched a bunch of hours of Sloopy Armed Eldrazi's.
So I would pick a Sloopy Eldrazi match over a Rally match any day, but
that's
just me.
Yes, I agree with that. Mostly because Rally, you know, it's almost as bad as Siege Rhino.
It's very slow.
It's just so goddamn resilient.
Yeah, and it's
it really
sticking
is.
Around.
Although luckily now we have our good old friend Kalitas, Trader of Get.
Mm-hmm. That sounded so Trader of Get.
Get. It's G-H-E-T. Yeah. Like, that's a word. It's a weird word.
Get.
Trader of Get. Anyways, if a creature an opponent controls would go to the graveyard, exile it instead, and they get a zombie. So not only can you not use Rally to call back all of these creatures, also if you are doing something like, you know, sacking a bunch of tokens to a Nantuko husk, not a bunch of tokens, but a bunch of creatures to a Nantuko husk so you can rally them back. Well, each creature that you sack, they're going to get a zombie.
Yeah.
That's a real deal.
Okay. Well, so that's something new anyway, that's happening with that matchup.
Yes, that is true. So obviously this weekend, I do think that we're still going to see so much Rally.
Yeah.
Especially now that they are putting more blue in there. There already was blue for Jace.
Yeah, because everybody wants Jace.
Yes, but now they're using Reflector Mage as well.
Oh, boy. Come on, people. Let's play everybody. A deck that's not dumb.
So that, you know, Rally, still out there. Still strong.
All right. Rally's out there. What exactly. else can we expect
You know,
to
it's
see?
Taken some hits, but it will rally back.
So here's a deck that's been doing pretty well. Bant Company.
Yes. One of the hosts of the Girlfriend Bracket, Holly, was talking about she's been playing this deck and she's really been enjoying it. And it's pretty cool, I think. It uses Collected Company.
Yep.
To get, and you have just basically just a ton of creatures which it can get.
I'm really excited about Bounding Crassus.
Yeah, Bounding Crassus. Tap or untap.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's
playing that.
Sweet.
So Deathmist Raptor, Den Protector, Hidden Dragon Slayer. Mm-hmm. So this looks like decks that we've seen before, but Yasova Dragon Claws in this deck too.
Ooh, yeah. Well, I mean, she only costs three.
She's only a one of. Sylvan Advocate, that's a new card.
Yeah, that's the one that if you have six or more lands, Sylvan Advocate and land creatures you control get, I believe, +4/+4.
+2/+2.
+2/+2.
Yep.
+4/+4 would be insane.
And Reflector Mage, of course, because if you're playing Jace, you might as well play Reflector Mage.
Yeah. I mean, it is banned, so there you go.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
And it uses Collected Company to obviously try and get bunch of those creatures there. On the board.
Well, this could be fun.
What?
I don't know. Just like this deck.
Oh, yeah. I agree. I'm actually kind of excited. I think I'm going to try and a little bit later this week before we head out to the GP, test a little bit with this and some other decks just to kind of get a feel for what's happening. But, you know, like all of these other GD decks, it's a little soft to rally.
Yeah, rally the ancestors.
Oh, rally.
So what's the deal with rally anyway? You're just rallying everything back and you're sacking everything to your husk?
Yep, you sack a bunch of value creatures to Nantuko Husk to attack for buttloads of damage and bounce your opponent's creatures to get in for buttloads of damage. And then once you've sacked a bunch of things to Nantuko Husk, you rally them all back and you do it again.
Oh, okay.
It also uses Collected Company to get lots of Nantuko Husks and those other value creatures onto the battlefield en masse.
I know there's a deck you've been playing, Megan.
Yes.
Which is not Rally.
No, I have still been playing Eldrazi's.
So you're playing Mono Green Eldrazi Ramp?
I've been playing one that still has red in it.
Oh, okay.
But Mono Green has really been the big Eldrazi deck that's been seeing the most success since the new set has come out.
So the idea is you play a lot of ramp spells, like you've got your Jotty Offshoot, which isn't a ramp spell, no. But...
Yeah, that's just gaining lives. But you play a lot of Explosive Vegetations, Nissa's Pilgrimages, Map of the Wastes in a lot of them, Hedron Archives, and depending on it, like Nissa's Renewal in some of them.
Oh, yeah. And then you play big, enormous Eldrazi's.
Yep. And you mess with your opponent's stuff.
So you get to play Ulamog in this deck. You get to play Eugene. You get to play Worldbreaker. Sick.
Yeah, and sometimes you get this sweet chain. So you have Shrine of the Forsaken God, which taps for 2 mana once you have 7 lands in play for colorless spells to help you ramp. And then you also play Sanctum of Eugene, which you can, once you cast a big colorless spell, you can sack it and go get another one. So the best part isn't that you just play one Ulamog. It's that you play an Ulamog, and then you go get another Ulamog, and then you go get another Ulamog, and then you go get another Ulamog.
This usually one, before this that build only conceded. Has two in it, but
only yeah, and that's fair. Since the introduction of, I believe, Worldbreaker is in there, correct?
Yep.
We've seen a lot more Worldbreaker. And these ones are also playing more Thought-Not Seers for something kind of to do in the middle of the game.
Yeah, because that's the question with these decks is, like, early on you're just ramping and, like, are you also just dying?
Sometimes you are just dying.
Yeah.
Or sometimes you only ramp and you never see your big business spells.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, what did I do this game? Well, I certainly got ramped. 12 lands in play. Good job, me.
Do you know what standard deck I've been fooling around with?
Which one?
On the side.
Fooling around with?
Don't tell.
Maria. Shame on you.
I've been fooling around with some Mono Brown Eldrazi.
Ooh, interesting.
A deck list I got from Frank Karsten, and it's playing a lot of little dudes. So you've got like Reaver Drone, which is your good old 2/1. And then you're playing Ghostfire Blade, and I've talked about it on the show before, and you just slap the Ghostfire Blade on there, boom, go to Pound Town.
Yeah.
Plays Thought Not Seer, because if you're not playing Thought Not Seer, in my opinion, you're not doing it right. And then it plays Reality Smasher, smash, smash, smash.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's got your early dudes and also, you know, playing your Ghostfire Blades on those and then your later game as well.
Absolutely.
It's a lot of fun.
Pretty sweet.
I hope that it can become even better with the release of Shadows Over Innistrad.
Yeah.
I don't really know how, but
I feel like this is what you keep saying about these aggro Eldrazi decks.
You're right, it is you actually. Had,
like, you know, you had an aggro Eldrazi deck when we had just BFZ, and you were like, well, I hope with the addition of Oath that it really gets competitive. I'm just saying, Maria, don't chase
one
a dream.
One day, Megan, one day.
That's not going to ever become a reality.
I'm going to play some leagues with it, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, absolutely.
I won a game against a little landfall deck, which was playing McKinney Slide Runners.
Oh, yeah,
and
some
Mina
of the landfall
Den, yep,
ducks do that.
And become immense, and mm-hmm. it was kind of neat. So that was a neat other deck that's out there as well.
If you're still looking to play aggro.
Yep.
Yeah, and if you're looking to beat Rally up, you can probably look at Abzan Blue. As much as I never want to tell anyone to play anything with a Siege Rhino on it, it relies on cards like Anafenza and Kalitas, which if when your opponent's creatures would die, they get exiled instead, which prevents them from being able to rally them back for all that value. Although we've seen, if you go back and watch like the finals of Grand Prix Oakland, which is versus, I don't know if it was Abzan or Abzan Blue, but you know, the opponent still got like an early Anafenza. And sometimes that's enough to keep the rally deck from doing its thing. But you know what? They still have like Sidisi's Faithfuls to bounce that Anafenza and then go off.
Yeah.
You know, Rally still won GP Oakland.
It did.
Even though it was playing against an Abzan deck. But maybe that was before Kalitas was around, so maybe he'll be able to help out a little bit.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see. And you can tune in, of course, on twitch.tv this weekend to watch some Grand Prix Houston action.
Absolutely. You could go to Daily MTG and read some of the tippity-typity words.
Megan will be tippity-typiting some words.
Yes.
That's the technical term.
Yes, it certainly is. Which will then be up in articles on Daily MTG about the Grand Prix. So check that out.
Yeah, and I will be monitoring the feature match area and putting life totals and that sort of thing in, and probably looking at the Twitch chat. So
big boss over here.
I am the master of the feature match area.
Maria, you really let this go to your head.
I know I have. It's great.
Hey everybody, Grand Prix DC is coming up.
Yeah, the president's gonna be there.
Yes, that's what I've heard. Barack Obama himself.
Yep, Barack and Michelle and Malia are going to be a team.
Oh, what about...
That's what I've heard.
What about...
Sasha?
Yes.
She's straight out.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Get out, Sasha.
My goodness.
She's the youngest. What are you going to do?
I didn't realize that the Obama family was so cutthroat about their
I mean,
magic teams.
Look, you got to have a good team at DC. There's going to be a lot of good players there. They're not messing
very
around.
True. Sorry, Sasha.
And I mean, Obama would go to a lot of GPs, but he just doesn't have time.
He's the president.
Being president. But since one is right in his backyard, he's going to show up.
He's going to show up. There you go. You heard it here first.
Would we lie to you?
So Grand Prix DC is exciting because team Grand Prix don't come around super often. So it's always really exciting.
Once in an eldritch moon, you might say.
Once in a spooky moon. they come around. And so it's super cool. Some, you know, some players are already announcing the teams that they're going to be playing with. Some it's, you know, I think taken for granted the teams that they're going to be playing with. But no matter who you are, it's an exciting event to look forward to.
Teams, I mean, here's the thing. Some people love team sealed events and some people hate them.
What? Who hates them?
Me.
What? You monster.
I know. Okay, here's the thing. I shouldn't say hate. I should say I find them infinitely more stressful than a normal sealed GP. Because I am not only responsible for my own play, but like how I play, I'm like responsible to myself, but also to the rest of my team.
You're not responsible for how I play.
Okay. I mean, but like if I keep losing, then like I'm the reason our team is doing poorly.
No, if you keep losing, it's because we didn't build our decks properly.
Oh, that's
and
a
it's
nicer
all
way
of
to
our
put
responsibilities.
It.
In fact, I've read multiple like gripes by people who are like, do you know what's the most bullshit thing about team GPs is when someone's like, oh, my team went 2-3, but I went 5-0. And it's just like, no, your team went 2-3.
Yeah.
Like, that's what happened.
Yeah, that's a good, better
like,
way to think of it.
Individual records are not part of a team GP because building it, you're like, building your decks, that is a team event. And if you like, if one person is doing great and the other two people are doing poorly, well, it's obviously because you didn't build
you
those decks correctly.
Yeah, and that's one of the challenges. I mean, is making three good decks out of your sealed pool, which, by the way, these decks are incredibly powerful. They're the most powerful decks you'll probably see like in any limited format. I mean, you just have so many cards to choose from.
So many cards
that the decks can be ridiculous.
Yes, they can.
So you need to understand that when you build your decks, you need to be able to have ways to deal with your opponent's multiple Linvalas. And I know that sounds crazy, but there are going to be people who have two Linvalas in their deck.
No.
I mean, how? It's going to happen. Why? Isn't that sick? It's like,
yeah, no, it totally is.
I'm being a little facetious, but at the same time, like, replace Linvala with another amazing creature, like Kalitas. A Linvala and a Kalitas, or a Linvala and a Felidar Sovereign, or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, that's going to happen, and you're going to have to deal with it. So, yeah,
you totally are. You
better build a way to deal with it.
Yeah, it's super cool. And, like, figuring out how to divide up those bombs
yeah.
is really, like, a huge part of the challenge of the format. And I, like, I don't know if... Like, is colorless going to make it easier? Is it going to make it more difficult? Like, can you treat like, it almost many, as a sixth color?
How many ways do you, like, I need
I have
the,
no idea. No. Like, could one person conceivably be playing, like, colorless X? Where it's, like...
That would be kind of neat.
Yeah, if they're able to play...
What about mono colorless?
Or what? They're not going to have enough cards for mono colorless.
That's what you say now.
And I'll say it later.
Okay. That would be awesome if somebody did that. Please tweet us a photo if you do that.
If you manage to build a monocolorless yeah. sealed deck.
Tweet us at MTAcast. I would love Absolutely. To see that in DC. Anyway, yes. Yeah, I mean, good question.
Exactly. Or is it going to be yet another like precious resource that you have to manage of like, oh my goodness, like this person needs some colorless, but this person also needs some colorless.
Yep, I think like, it is.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting.
Try and make them nice fights.
So if you're planning on going to Grand Prix DC, there's a couple of things that you can do. Mostly all of those things are practice.
A couple of things. One's practice, the other's practice.
The third one's practice.
Yep.
Whether it's, you know, a lot of people have teams that are coming from different places all across the country or maybe all across the world.
Yeah.
Still find a way to build some three-person sealed pools because it's just... such
it's
a
so
crazy
hard.
Experience
and it's a time crunch.
Yeah, it totally is. You do not have enough time.
There is not enough
Factually.
Time.
You do not have
just
enough time.
Period. There isn't.
And you do get a longer build time.
It doesn't
these
still not
like they
time.
Start earlier than most Grand Prix because they hate me
because Megan's a sleepy
and
goblin.
They don't want me to sleep.
Yeah.
It's
Personal Vendetta.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. But you know, it's still just not enough time.
So my question is what do you want your decks to look like ideally? Do you want three decks that are like, is it possible to have three good, like, long game control decks? Probably not.
Probably not. I think the answer is just that you want to spread out your bombs as much as you can. You want everyone to have, you know, something. If you're, as long as your pool accommodates, you want everyone to have something that's just like, when it comes down, it has to be dealt with.
Yeah.
Or it's, you know, like a crazy, like Fall of the Titans.
Yeah.
Where it's just like they can play it and it can really swing a game. So you want to divide up those kinds of effects. Because if someone has like four of those, again, sure, they're going to win all of their matches, but it's not about their individual record.
Right.
If someone is left with no ways to finish out a
well,
game.
Well, then your team's going down.
Yeah, which finishers is another good thing, right? You want to make sure everyone has a way to finish the game, whether it's that they're super aggro and they just have like a swarm effect.
Yep.
And maybe like mass
Swarm
pump
surge,
yeah,
for instance,
exactly like mass pump spells, or they have, you know, like some giant flyer, or they just have like a multitude of flyers, and hopefully one of them will stick.
I think that's a good point, just to even talk about in normal Oath of the Gatewatch Limited, is mm-hmm. that you need to have some way to break through the wall and get to the end game and
yeah.
kill your opponent, because board stalls are a reality in
totally.
This format, and you're gonna have to have some way to crack through, even if you have like a couple of chain mages or whatever. Guess what? Those probably are going to die. And so you've got to think beyond, like, maybe you play a wave wing elemental.
Yeah.
Which normally wasn't a great card, but it gets through board stall. So
it totally does. Like a 5/6 flyer is a real thing when
That's
you've got
the real
landfall.
Deal.
I want to. So yeah. And then splitting up your removal, obviously.
Yeah. You don't want one deck to be great. And I mean, like sometimes you're like, I need my deck to be awesome. But you got to really think about your teammates as
yeah,
well. Like,
you really do.
Because it's not just your record that's going to go on and take the team to victory.
Mm-hmm.
We played in GP, what was it, Sacramento?
Portland.
Sorry.
Was
yep.
the team one that
GP
we played.
GP Portland was the team we played with Judge Rob.
Yeah.
And I played a very aggressive deck. However, it was not aggressive enough. So yeah. that's something to remember as well. Like you can build a very aggressive deck, but it needs
yeah.
to be insane.
And we built me a super controlling deck, but I had no finishers.
Yeah, so.
So I could literally keep the game I could keep from losing until it ended up that I had decked myself because I was drawing a lot of cards and I had no way to kill my opponent.
Yeah.
That happened multiple times.
Oh, boy. So, yeah, like, because we've been there and we've seen it. We're old.
We've been there. We've veterans. Seen it all.
Because I was beat by a deck at that tournament that was more aggressive than my deck.
Yeah.
And it was crazy. It was red, white, and it was so fast. And it had so much, I think it had like equipment or maybe it was when Bestow was around. Like, or whatever.
Cheap removal.
Yeah. And it was like really good. So that's the point. Like you can build an aggressive deck, but it needs to be.
Oh, it could have been a Convoke, like a red, white Convoke, because that was during the time of Triplicate Spirits.
It's got to be the best aggressive deck that you've literally ever seen.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's not going to get there because they're going to play better creatures.
Yeah, they totally are.
So anyway,
you have to kill them before they get a chance to.
So that's my question. Like, am I going to end up playing an aggressive deck this time, or would I rather just not risk it because it's risky? I don't know.
Probably not.
Anyway, our teammate's going to be Athena, streamer Elantris online.
Yes. Super excited.
We're really excited.
It's going to be awesome. So hopefully you're going to be there. If you are, come say hi. We would love to say hi. And remember, there's a lot of things that you can do to prepare, and all of them are practice.
Flavor Text Theater presents Mad Libs.
We're bringing back one of our personal favorite games.
Oh, yes.
Where we take flavor text from some Oath of the Gatewatch cards and we make them into Mad Libs.
Yay!
So we'll go back and forth a little bit here. Okay, Maria, I need a noun.
Okay, pickles. Oh, or pickle.
God. should have known. An adjective.
Greasy.
Another adjective.
Yummy.
A famous person.
Dick Van Dyke.
Interesting choice.
Just came out.
A place.
Hell.
And an occupation. But it's a job, Maria. It's just literally any job.
Farmer.
All right.
Okay.
So this is the new flavor text for Roiling Waters.
Ooh, okay.
Which originally read, "The royal may be unpredictable, but it is not uncontrollable. Noy and dar to zeem royal mage. The pickle may be greasy, but it is not yummy." Dick Van Dyke. Hell farmer. Without laughing.
It's so good.
The pickle may be greasy, but it is not yummy. Dick Van Dyke, hell farmer.
All right,
go for it.
All right, give me your pen. Okay. All right.
Okay.
I need a noun, please.
Elephant.
Okay. And a plural noun?
Lacrosse players.
Class players. Another plural noun, please. Say it.
Youngest daughters? Yes, youngest daughters.
Okay. And then let's do it your way and give me a famous person.
Celine Dion.
And an occupation.
Psychiatrist.
Okay. This is for the flavor text of Mighty Leap, which initially read, "We may have lost faith in our gods, but we are far from losing faith in ourselves. Munda, ambush leader." It now reads, "We may have lost elephant in our lacrosse players, but we are far from losing elephant in our youngest daughters." Celine Dion, psychiatrist.
Some deep words from Celine Dion, psychiatrist.
Yeah, really deep.
All right, I need a verb.
Grind.
I need a noun.
Chicken shit. That's an adjective, really. But I mean, like, actual chicken shit.
I get it. Yeah. An adjective.
A crinkly.
A name.
Bastard. You want a name like a
Carl. Person's name. Yeah, sure.
Carl.
A store.
Build-A-Bear.
And an occupation.
I'm always getting hung up on occupation.
Yeah.
Shock jock.
All right.
It's a very specific occupation.
What is a shock jock?
It's like, you know, those radio stations that have like, you know, who's
they
that guy?
They say really stupid stuff. Okay.
I can't remember his name.
Like on Parks and Rec, what's this? The douche?
Yeah, the douche. Okay. Yes, like that. Howard Stern.
Crazy Ira and the douche.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyways, so this is for a chitinous cloak.
Okay.
Which originally read, if we're going to survive, we have to use every tool at our disposal, especially the disgusting ones. Ryza, Oren Reef Scout.
Okay.
If we're going to grind, we have to use every chicken shit at our crinkly. Wait, no. We have to use every chicken shit at our disposal, especially the crinkly ones.
Oh, gross. The crinkly shits. Megan, I've got the crinkly shits.
Stop it. Carl, Build-A-Bear shock jock.
Build-A-Bear shock jock.
If we're going to grind, we have to use every chicken shit at our disposal, especially the crinkly ones. Carl, Build-A-Bear shock jock.
No, shock jock is named Carl. All right, here we go.
Okay.
Very short. I need a proper noun.
Kansas.
And an adjective.
Mostly stupid.
All right, so this is a natural endurance. Eldrazi don't die easy. Sometimes they don't die at all. Instead, it now reads, Kansas don't die mostly stupid. Sometimes they don't die at all. Kansas don't die mostly stupid. Kansas don't die at all. A natural endurance.
Okay, so I need a verb. Past tense. You can just say a verb and I'll make it past tense.
Farted.
All right.
I went there.
A place.
Oh, you know, the Phantom Zone.
All right. A verb.
Ninja kick.
All right. Another verb.
Sideways. That's not going to work. Chill.
Sure.
Just like chilling.
And an adverb.
Oh, slumpily.
Sure.
It's a word.
Yeah.
Don't judge me.
I'm not.
Okay.
This is for Immobilizer Eldrazi. Eldrazi.
That's cute. And Eldrazi.
And it denied the Zendikari the chance to stand and die fighting.
Okay.
I can't.
Oh, come on. Read it.
I can't.
We're having a ground deer moment.
Oh my god. Ground deer. It farted the Phantom Zone.
Oh, wow.
It farted the Phantom Zone, the ninja kick to chill. Wait, no.
That makes no sense.
No, it farted the Phantom Zone, the chance to ninja kick and chill slumpily. That made no sense.
Chill slumpily?
Chill slumpily.
All right,
it farted
Megan.
The Phantom Zone.
It farted it out. All right, I need an adjective.
Glorious.
Mm. And I need a plural noun.
A bunch of reindeer.
Bunch. Because you're thinking of reindeer. I know why. Because of ground deer.
Because of ground deer.
I need another adjective.
Furious.
And a noun.
Car salesman.
This is Oblivion Strike. It's bad enough to be torn to pieces. It's worse by far to be torn from the world itself. It's glorious enough to be torn to a bunch of reindeers. It's furious by far to be torn from the car salesman.
Oh, God!
What? That just means, like, you're, like, torn away from him.
Oh, I was imagining, like, the car salesman was a lady and was pregnant and it was torn from her.
What? Why would you imagine that?
I'm sorry. I can't help what my mind does. I can't help what my mind does.
Dick Van Dyke, hell farmer.
Well, everybody, that's the time we have a Magic the Amateuring this week.
Absolutely, it is.
And honestly, I guess, like, we're done.
More than the time that we had, probably.
Probably. Thanks for joining us. Remember, another episode of Magic the Prothering is coming out this week, so stay tuned for that with a delightful guest.
It's so great.
And support us on Patreon, patreon.com/mtacast, if you want to see us produce more episodes of My Roommate as a Planeswalker, or if you want to get one of these sweet new Playmat deals.
They're pretty sweet.
Coming your way.
Oh, yeah.
We're on Twitter, at mtacast, online, magictheamateuring.com, of course, on iTunes and Stitcher, as always, facebook.com/magictheamateuring. Remember, keep your plants planted in your hell farm.
Don't harvest
farmed before
don't
spring.
don't harvest your hell farm before it's fully grown.
That's the saying
there. It's the saying you were looking for.